else? Remember I said about sticks and stones? Words may not hurt you. Whoa!
Jose is on.
Here we go.
Of course, it should have stayed on the wall. Well,
I'll come here.
Go ahead.
Check minus? Check minus is means you get partial credit. I didn't quite like what you did.
You didn't like what I did?
No, I think you could have done better. Juliana. This is your thing. Oh, so. You're the only one who does multi calling, so I took a flyer on it. Lex. Don't make me sure. Leave me out there. I'm an old man. Leg. Ethan. Check minus means you did less than expectations, but you did get some credit. Check means you met expectations. Check plus meant you were above expectations. So ultimately, it comes down to the effort that you put into it. If it looks like you're following the directions and adhering to expectations, you know, you will get the full check, which is basically 10 points. Every assignment's out of 10. If you get a check minus, but you did all the cases, that means you get a 7. If you did less than all the cases that was with that particular assignment, I basically take the value and divide it in half. So just so you know what the standing is. We did not have time to make comments, but overall, those of you who did the ethics assignment, I enjoyed that. I think most of you that did it actually got check pluses. You went above what I was looking for. You really were thoughtful in your responses. On the briefs, the area that I saw that was lacking was the court's opinion. But, you know, ultimately, yeah, at least we're doing something, and I was glad to see. Oh, yeah, I was giving you a quiz.
Oh.
I did.
Is it the multiple choice one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Close it up.
What are you doing?
Yes.
Don't stop until I say.
You said close it? Is it open books?
No.
Close it up.
Don't stop until I say.
You get zero.
It is crazy, isn't it? Well, because you would be caught cheating. And I know you don't cheat. It is crazy. The sword of justice. The sword of Damocles. Smite you down. Cheating. He's all deal with intentional swords. Close that notebook. Close that computer. Close it. I'm not gonna help. Don't go yet. Don't go yet. Screw myself up. You see that? You knocked me out, man. Go! Typo on two, it's what torts did Walker commit?
You said what?
Oh. Typo on two. I asked you what torts did Sam commit, it's what torts did Walker commit. Two minutes. Thank you. 60 seconds. Switch them up. Give them to someone else. When you get someone else's quiz, put your name down on the bottom. You're going to put how many they got right on the top. You're going to put your name on the bottom. Put your name on the bottom. Any quiz that doesn't have someone else's name down on the bottom will not be counted. All right, here we go. What the heck is going on in number one?
B.
We have one thing saying B. So did Walker commit the tort of intentional infliction of emotional distress? We have a claim that yes, but only if Adam intended to cause Linda serious emotional distress. Do you actually, if you're going to commit an intentional tort, have to mean to do what it is you were accused to do? No. What must you do? You must mean to do something that results in. Well, yeah, process elimination, because he did something. He meant to do something. So A for number one. All right. Number two. We got a Louisville Slugger situation going on here. What do we think?
E.
All right, how many people think he committed an assault and battery, which is E? What is a battery?
It's something that, like, that you actually hit.
It's the touching.
Yeah.
You don't have to see it coming. What's an assault?
It's an accident.
You have to see it coming. Did he see it coming?
No,
so it's a battery. All right, three. We have a series of violations. We're seeking compensatory damages from a car accident. What is the total estimated damages that a plaintiff potentially could win if a jury sides with plaintiff? How many people think it's A? 40,000. Anyone think it's something different?
10.
What do you think it is?
10.
Why 10? What would not be valid for damages from a car accident? What do you think?
30.
Why do you think 30?
She couldn't go to work for 2 months.
Remember when we talked about grubs? Remember all the damages that I went through? Was not loss of wages from serious injury? Is that not something you could win?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Good guess, but you're wrong. It's 40,000. Those are the type of damages that you can seek. All right, four. Ooh, we got a little touching below the belt going on here. Was there any torts, if any, committed?
Trespass.
You put the tort of trespass? trespass involves the land. I don't know if you would constitute that to be land, but... All right, what do we think?
D, battery.
D, we think we have a battery. What's defamation?
Saying
something or writing something, right, that harms one's reputation. Tort of trespass. Entering the land of another without permission. Interference with a prospective advantage. Anyone remember that one? That's business stuff. I don't think what was going on was business stuff. So, even if you did not mean to harm somebody, if you touched them in any way without privilege or consent, you committed a battery. Now,
but what is, when was it like distinct between like sexual harassment and battery? Or like,
you touched her below the belt?
It could be both. It depends upon the statutes. I don't want to get into the different statutes that some states have and some don't, because that's kind of confusing. So we just kind of stick with common law. But yeah, if you do not have consent to touch, it is a battery. Now, will he win anything if he sues her? That's a different argument. Because in order to win, what must you show? Some type of damages. Did he suffer any damage? Probably not. But that still does not mean that the tort was not committed. All right, that's D. Four is D. And five. Any guess on five? D.
Yeah.
Not liable for defamation. Why?
Because
it was the truth. Absolutely. Very good. But how many they got right on top? Circle it. Hand it back to the original person, and then pass them here. Make sure all the quizzes end up here. Anyone get a five? All right, good job, a couple of people. Fours? Threes? All right, twos? Please tell me there was no one in this room that did not get at least one right. All right, good. Make sure they all end up here. Now, by the way, keep in mind, the total average of your homeworks and the total average of your quizzes are worth more in terms of your overall average than any singular exam minus the final. So the goal is to get as many points on these as you can. All right, all right.
Do you put this in Blackboard?
I have not figured out how to put my grade book system into Blackboard. So right now, all that's there is your test. I did. I put your midterm grades in.
All I see is the test.
The midterm?
Yeah, you should be able to see what your average was with what I had minus the quiz.
Now I'm checking.
All right, I got something for you. An interesting situation that I actually read about that happened in New Jersey. And it's relevant to what we're talking about here. Here's the story, is the headline news. A kid called a woman Karen at a New Jersey amusement park, but it's not enough to sue, a court rules. Apparently, there was this 55-year-old woman who sued Speedway Go-Kart, no, sorry, I Play America in Freehold, New Jersey. She sued because the workers did nothing to stop harassment that she suffered in line. Apparently, she must have been really short because she went to go on a go-kart ride and the kids that were working there, the employees and a manager, told her she was not tall enough to ride the go-kart. So while she was there, she was, I guess, arguing her case, saying that she had been there previously and that she had ridden the ride previously. A bunch of kids that were waiting behind her started screaming at her, calling her a white bitch and a Karen. Well, the woman in her claim was terribly embarrassed and humiliated by these events and felt she was discriminated against because she was wrongfully denied access to the ride. So the discrimination must be the based on the fact that she is height challenged. So she sued and she claimed essentially that the company was negligent in not allowing her to ride. And the business breached its duty of care by not preventing other guests from yelling at her. I know, what? Well, let's think about it. What are the elements of negligence?
Having a duty.
A duty.
And breaching that duty.
And there's a breach.
Harm caused by the duty.
So the proximate cause that the breach resulted in the harm.
The harm was foreseeable.
And the plaintiff was actually injured. So she lost during trial and it went up to the appeals court. What do you think the appeals court found?
She was physical harm.
Well, hold on. Is she accurate in her claim that the entertainment place had a duty to protect her from derogatory words made by other guests?
No.
Why not?
It wasn't foreseeable.
Sticks and stones.
Why is it not foreseeable?
Because who knew that they were going to say something about it?
Okay, you don't think that if you're ever in a situation like that and some woman is causing a line to get longer and she's sitting there making a scene, that other people are not going to say something to her?
It's not definite.
It's not definite, but is it likely?
It's possible.
It's possible, so it is foreseeable. But what'd you say?
Sticks and stones.
If you're sitting there going, wah, 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 and someone calls you out on it, and you turn around and claim, oh, my feelings were hurt, and there was some type of negligence going on. Well, ultimately, she lost in both instances. She lost at trial, and she lost at the appellate level. The appeals court ruled, and I quote, unlike dangerous physical conditions that can be inspected and remedied, or criminal activity that can be deterred through security measures, verbal insults that occur spontaneously cannot be reasonably prevented. So, sticks and stones. Sticks and stones, baby. Good stuff. Now here's the thing, if you actually read the news and you read stories, the stuff that we talk about in here happens every single day of the week. And there is so many people, we are a litigious society, that will sue because their feelings are hurt, not realizing that's not enough. So think about how much money she had to spend to go through a trial and to have an appeal. Because she's paying for that. And think of how much time of the business she wasted because of that frivolous claim. If I was king, I would allow the defendant to receive all legal fees and the costs associated with a bogus claim just for wasting the court's time. But I'm not kidding.
Okay.
I know, we kind of figured that out a while ago. Just saying. All right. So what were we talking about? Oh, negligence. Keys to negligence.
Do you know how to find the average? Or how to get it?
I have no idea how. I don't know what you see. Did negligence per se. All right, here's some keys. Key number two, because apparently I gave you some keys on the last one. Proximate cause. We understand duty, right? This is a responsibility that society feels that most people owe in certain circumstances. And generally, the duty typically comes from some type of relationship that exists between the parties. Unless, of course, you're just an outright bystander where you have no relationship whatsoever. But key number two is proximate cause. To determine proximate cause in negligence cases, there has to be a reasonable connection between the alleged breach and the type of harm that was suffered. Let me say that again. There has to be a reasonable connection between whatever the breach was, the negligent act, and the type of damage that was suffered. If the type of damage suffered has no potential link to whatever the breach was, there is no proximate cause. So if you are contending, you were walking up the stairs coming into the college, all right, up those concrete stairs to get into the building downstairs, and a chunk of meteorite fell from the sky and impaled you in your head, crushing your cranial cavity, killing you on the spot. If your estate turned around and sued the college claiming proximate cause, what type of injuries would be foreseeable if you went up bad stairs? Could fall through, you could slip, something. Is getting impaled by a chunk of meteorite, is that foreseeable link? No, so you cannot contend negligence in that situation. Essentially, the connection point is that nexus. Breach has to link at some point with the foreseeable or reasonable type of damage that could be sustained by that breach. If there is no connection, no nexus point where they intersect, you're not going to be able to establish proximate cause. Questions? Okay. Ultimately, this concept of proximate cause is what limits the consequences from any type of potentiality. Again, if you have an imagination, you can come up with some pretty wacky, zany stuff. Should you be responsible for any wacky thing that might potentially happen at some random point in the odds, or you have better odds of getting eaten by a shark when you go swimming on the Cape? No, that's just not fair. We could not, as a society, we could function. So proximate cause tries to limit the possible outcomes to keep the consequences, punishments, based on reality, as opposed to the imagination. The majority of courts use what's known as the but-for test. But-for test. The but-for test is a measure of defendant's conduct. In other words, had not the defendant acted in such a way, plaintiff would not have been injured. Or to put it another way, but for defendant's actions, would plaintiff have suffered harm? Here you go. O'clock in the morning, there was a car accident involving two drivers. Defendant had been working late at the office. If defendant had not been working late at the office, would he have been at the point where the accident occurred? No, he would not. So, but for the fact that he worked late, there would not have been any accident. But here's the question. We have that Just because, though, defendant was working late, was that necessarily the cause of the accident? The accident could not have occurred if he was not working. But just because he worked late, is that necessarily the cause? So what do you think the next line of questioning would be?
What?
Well, not necessarily. He was working because obviously he had to work overtime. Something was going on. Okay, what time? You think that would have been a factor? How would that have played out?
Sleep. Depending, yeah, like maybe depending on how long he worked.
Oh, what happens if he just worked a triple shift?
Tired.
Yeah, could have been tired. Okay, he could have fell asleep at the wheel. That might have played a factor. What if he worked at a bar?
Drunk.
Oh, yeah, and he was doing some shots, you know, over the course of his shift. You know, had he not been working that late, had he not been doing those shots at work, there might not have been an accident. So really, this is the key. This is where plaintiff's attorney would really have to dig down in the situation. Again, but because it's a civil suit and you're dealing with a preponderance of the evidence, it's really a close call. Sometimes it works and thus allows you to establish negligence. But sometimes it does not. So you really, 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 really have to dig down. Hypothetical number two. Defendant gets in a car accident with plaintiff, and he smashes into a car that just so happened to have dynamite in it. Which explodes. Now here we go. Here's where the negligence comes in. 10 blocks away, a nurse was carrying a baby in a hospital, heard the explosion, was startled, and dropped the infant. And the kid landed on its head. Can parents of the child sue the driver who hit the car?
No.
Why not? Does it matter? Doesn't matter. We'll think of the Cardoza zone of danger. Boom! Big explosion! Could that possibly nexus, because was the driver, was there, well, let me put it this way, was there negligence involved?
Yes.
Possibly. Why on God's earth would another vehicle have dynamite in it? And obviously the defendant smashed into their car. He possibly could have been driving negligent. But would that allow the parents to sue either operator of the vehicles? If there was a negligence claim, who could they sue?
The nurse.
The nurse. For not probably holding the child. Don't know. Again, it's that zone. What's reasonable? What's a reasonable zone? If the building and the explosion was right next to each other, and the building suffered damage when the explosion happened, and the building rocked, is that a different outcome than something that happened 10 blocks away? Absolutely. Absolutely. And then you go to situations where you could have what's known as joint tortfeasors. You could have more than one party that does something that is a perceived potential breach of a duty of care. Ready for this one? Plaintiff is choking on food that was given to him by waiter at a diner. The moment he takes a bite, starts choking. But at the very same instance he starts choking on the food, a random bullet flies through the plate glass window and goes through his head, killing him instantly. What was the cause of his death? He was... What would have happened the next second later? We don't know, do we? What was the actual death blow? Don't know. So who are you going to sue? Or try to sue? His windpipe was completely blocked. He was going down. He had one more second left of breath before he died. At the same point, wow, happened. Who are you going to sue? What was the actual cause of death? You don't know. Both. So what do? You sue them both. Joint taut feasors. Both caused potential death. How about this? You're walking through the street and you jaywalk. What's jaywalking?
Crossing.
You cross where there is no crosswalk. And the moment you get into the street, two cars do a head-on collision and you suffer what once was called the Malachi Crunch. You get crushed between the both cars. Which driver killed you?
Both of them. You killed yourself.
I know.
Well, do you have that as a defense? Or do the drivers have that as a defense? Yeah. The Malachi brothers, yeah. All right, so who do you sue? Driver A, driver B?
Both of them.
Well, both of them are responsible, but who's more responsible?
So couldn't the driver sue you?
Oh, well, you did definitely. You contributed, did you not? Here's your but-for test. But for the fact that you were jaywalking, would you have died? Ooh, that's a good defense. Ah. Here's another situation. Plaintiff is a tenant who is visiting defendant's apartment. No, sorry, strike that. Plaintiff is a tenant in defendant's apartment. I gotta read the situation right. All right, in the terms of the lease, defendant is responsible for all reasonable repairs to the area within the apartment. Okay? Well, plaintiff goes to the entrance door and the wind blows. And as a result of the wind blowing, the door hits the plaintiff falls down the stairs and tears all the cartilage in their knee. Plaintiff claims that the fall was caused because there was no door catch. You know what a door catch is? On external doors, they're either like a gas piston or a chain that prevents the door from opening all the way. The door was also, didn't have any type of safety chain, so no gas piston, no chain. But here's the thing. What was the actual cause of the tenant falling down the stairs? Was it? Was it the wind, or was the fact that there was no chain?
Both.
So, could the plaintiff sue the landlord? If there was no wind, would the chain be a factor? So do you have a claim against your landlord?
No, you do not.
See, negligence is not as clear-cut as you would think. There's so many things that could happen that could throw a simple claim awry. But you need to be able to think outside the box. You need to not only look at the situation on its face, but you have to ask for these questions. But for this, but for that, but for that, but for this. Would it have happened? By the way, the law does not protect you from acts of God. Hold on, I got it in here somewhere. Oh, I love this one. Love this one. No, that's not that. Where's my act of God? I used to have a good one in here. All right, well, let's think about this way. You're driving down the road, and it's been windy, and obviously we know it's going to start getting cold at night, which causes things to freeze. And of course we know, if you took simple science, when things get hot, they expand. When they get cold, they shrink. Well, you're driving down the road, and suddenly a tree branch, because it got cold, and it got hard and got brittle, snaps, falls down, and impales you. You don't die, but you get a big tree branch that comes right through your roof, goes right through your thigh. Who are you going to sue? Can you sue the property owner whose tree it was? Why not? Should you be responsible for inspecting every single branch of every single tree that may grow on your property? Plus, can you tell by looking at a branch if it's live or dead all the time? No. There was a tree in Sutton that fell. Sutton's my hometown. And it was right adjacent to the grocery store. The tree had full leaves on it. Everything looked fine. But like the tree literally snapped, fell down, crushed two cars. Well, it turns out the tree had been rotting for years. So while the bark and everything on the outside looked fine, the core was nothing but mush. The only way you would have known that the tree was dead is if you did boring samples. And who has ever done a boring sample on trees on their land?
Is that the same as say I had a tree on my property, but it fell in your car, but you were in Walmart's parking lot, and the tree fell in you in Walmart's parking lot? Is that the same? The weight, I guess you could say?
Depends. It comes down to the nature of the tree. If the tree is clearly dead, and a reasonable person would say, God damn, look at that tree, it's been dead. There's no branches, there's no life, it's all rotten, all the bark had fallen off. And then every time the wind blows, it goes, and you actually put a marker on there, you know, showing that you knew it was dead, then yes, you could be liable. But if it looks like a normal, healthy tree, that's act of God. You cannot be held responsible for things outside the realm of your control. You are driving on a back road, and it's raining, and then just as you go around the corner, a huge surge of water comes racing down the hill, overwhelms a culvert. You know what a culvert is? A culvert's a raised area that usually has some type of piping that allows water to go under the road. Well, the culvert completely collapses, and you fell down in the hole with your car. Can you sue the town? Act of God, potentially. Did the town have any way of knowing that that area flooded frequently? Or had they recently inspected the culverts and everything looked fine and there had never been a flood like that? It was the 1-in-1,000-year storm. So again, it's not clear cut. It's not clear cut.
No, I was just taking in the information.
Hmm.
Good. So you're driving down a back road, the water comes. The town doesn't. The town's not at fault. It's like, does the insurance still pay for that?
Your insurance would. The town's wouldn't.
The act of God, though.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
well, let's put it this way. I'm gonna cycle that back to put it on a state of being depends. It depends on what you're talking about. If it's car insurance, probably. But if it's homeowners insurance, maybe not. Maybe not. A lot of people in the floods down in North Carolina. They got fucked. Because the insurance company turns around and says, you didn't have flood insurance. Well, they lived in an area that had never flooded before. So why on earth would they have to get flood insurance? By law, if FEMA comes in and declares that you live in a flood hazard zone where it could happen, by law, you have to get flood insurance. But if you live in an area where it had never flooded in the recorded history of mankind, the fact that these insurance companies are screwing these people over, it's awful. But it is what it is. All right. What happens if you have a situation that is kind of like negligence, but kind of not? Well, there are situations where you still could be held liable. Not under the theory of negligence, but under the theory of res ipsa loquitur. And by the way, if you are a business owner, these are the types of situations where frequently businesses get hammered. Res ipsa loquitur. The thing speaks for itself. Under this doctrine of law, one is presumed to be negligent if they had exclusive control over whatever it was that caused the harm. The key is that exclusive control. So, you don't have to prove negligence. All you have to prove is that defendant was the only one who had access to it, and it couldn't have happened under normal circumstances without negligence being present. So meaning, you don't have to prove duty breach. And to a degree, you don't even have to prove proximate cause. All you have to do is show is that the person was the only one who had access to it, and whatever it was that happened couldn't have happened unless someone did something wrong. Got a good hypothetical for you. Actually, it's a real case. Most of these hypotheticals do come from real cases. There's a construction site, and up on top of the roof is a pallet of bricks. Have any of you ever seen a pallet of bricks? Have you ever touched a pallet of bricks? Have you ever tried knocking over a pallet of bricks? Guess what? It's next to impossible to do. Why? It's heavy. And how are the bricks stacked? They're like a mismatch pattern that causes one brick to basically hold in place two bricks below it with the use of gravity. Well, let's say there's a pallet of bricks up on top of this building, and you walk out the front, and the next thing you know, it's raining bricks. A whole bunch of bricks fall down and cause significant harm to you. Do you have to prove duty breach? No. What would you have to show? Would you actually have to show that someone knocked the bricks over? No. What would you have to show? What did I just tell you? You'd have to show exclusive control. How would you show in that hypothetical exclusive control? What? No. Does anybody have access to the roof here?
No.
Who has access? Maintenance. Okay. So no one else but maintenance could have gotten up on the roof. No one else but maintenance could have touched the stack of bricks. And do bricks, pallets of bricks, normally fall over? No, they do not. So would you have suffered from raining bricks had not, obviously, someone did something wrong? You don't have to show that someone actually did something wrong. All you have to do is show exclusive control, and pallets of bricks don't normally fall. Res ipsa loquitur. Whoop. Boom, boom, boom. Something went wrong, and no one else had access to it. Oh, and one final one. And you did not contribute. So, let me give you another situation. Let's say you went to BJ's, or Home Depot, or Costco, or I don't think there's any Sam's Clubs in the area. A big box store. And you decide you want to get a pack of your favorite cookies. But as you go into the aisle where the cookies are, you notice that the little bin slot is empty. But lo and behold, up on the top shelf is a whole fresh pallet of your favorite delicious sugary snack. Nobody sees anything, but suddenly there's a big boom, and there's you laying on the ground with a whole pallet of cookies on top. Can you sue BJ's?
No.
Why not?
Contributed to it.
How?
By climbing the
pallet. Yeah, chances are the reason why the pallet fell is because you climbed up there to get a pack of cookies. If you contribute in a res ipsa loquitur situation, you have no claim. Because but for your contribution, you would not have suffered harm. Questions? Done the bricks. Oh, nerve damage one. This is a good one. I forgot about this one. All right, so you are getting surgery and they knock you out. And at some point during the surgical procedure, you suffered nerve damage. Which doctor are you going to sue?
The hospital.
Well, here's the thing. Have you ever seen a surgery situation? How many people are actually in the room?
A lot.
A lot. So who are you going to sue? How do you know? Do you know that you actually suffered the injury because of the surgery? It could have been a nurse when she stuck you with a needle to give you an IV. You could have been suffering trauma before actually going under the knife. Who are you going to sue? Well, that's in the end what you're going to probably have to do. You're going to have to sue the hospital, and you're going to have to sue anybody. And you can't prove negligence. You can't prove who did it. So you're going to have to sue under this theory of res ipsa loquitur. The only defense to res ipsa loquitur is contributory negligence. If they can prove that you started jerking because you didn't disclose to the doctor that you had an allergy to the anesthetic, then you would not win that case.
So what if you like didn't know? I still can't sue, but what would happen then?
What do you mean?
If they gave you this anesthetic, but nobody knew you were allergic to it.
At some point in your medical history, you would have had to experience something. If it's just a fluky case, it depends on which state you're in. And we'll get to that in a minute. Other questions? All right, well, let's do defenses then. Oh, wait, no, oh, hold on. One more. Where the heck is this? It should be defenses next. Going into strict liability. Fine, we'll do strict liability. There are situations where no matter what precautions are taken, if something goes wrong, a person will be held liable. These are situations where strict liability is in place. Strict liability typically involves when you are harmed by a product or some other type of instrumentality. So, you get a ride-on lawnmower. You buy it brand new. You put the right level of oil in. You put the right type of gas in. You sit your bum down on the comfy seat. You turn the key, and it blows up. That could be a strict liability situation. Because obviously, something was wrong in either the manufacture or the assembly of a lawn tractor. Because have you ever heard in the news of a lawn tractor? Lawn tractors around the country just randomly blowing up? No, obviously someone did something wrong. But who? Don't know. So who would you sue? Would you sue the store that you got it from? Would you sue the manufacturer? Probably sue both. And let them see if they could get themselves out with the claim. Strict liability, as a legal theory, applies to situations where there is either one of three situations. Where one is injured by a certain dangerous instrumentality. So, you're using something, and that something is what caused the harm. But you also must show it's not because of something you did. Now, if instead of using gas, you filled the tank with lighter fluid while smoking a cigarette, and that was the cause of the explosion, well, guess what? You did it.
Over the summer, one of my stepmom's friends had a portable battery explode on him, and he suffered, like,
possibly. Were they using it properly? Were they following the directions?
I believe so. I think he had it charging and he literally just grabbed it to put it in his pocket. It was like right next to his baby's head before he grabbed it, and then once he put it in his pocket.
Interesting. That could be a situation of strict liability. But you have to read all of the paperwork that comes with it. Because manufacturers are clever. Yeah.
So I don't know if you can read that.
Yeah, you would need to. That would have to be analyzed. And you would have to read the fine print. Because sometimes with electronic devices, manufacturers actually put in the terms that you can't sue, you have to go to mediation. Mm-hmm. And usually you have to file a mediation claim in like Minnesota or something like that.
So if they would like put on the instruction, like you need to charge it with this certain voltage charger or whatever, like,
yep.
You know, I mean, if you weren't using that.
Right, so if instead of using the charger that they sold, you went out and used your one that you got with your iPhone, yeah, that could be their defense. No, you didn't do exactly what you were instructed to do. All right, everyone get that? All right. Defenses. What are the defenses to negligence? Well, here you go. The most significant defense to negligence is contributory negligence. Even if the plaintiff is successful in establishing duty breach, proximate cause, foreseeability, and harm, defendant may be able to get out of it if they can show that the plaintiff did something that added to the harm. Now, here's the thing. There are two types of contributory negligence, and it really boils down to which state you are in. But let me give you a hypothetical. So let's say that defendant is driving a car, plaintiff is the passenger, both are injured when defendant's car strikes Clueless's car. Damn Clueless. Now here's the thing. If both cars were driven negligently, does the defendant have the ability to sue Clueless? I will re-say what I said. Defendant is driving the car. Plaintiff is with them. Plaintiff is the passenger. There's a car accident. Both are injured because defendant's car got in an accident with Clueless. Both defendant and Clueless were driving negligently. Can defendant sue Clueless?
No.
Why? Exactly. Easy situation. Because if defendant was not driving negligent, he probably or she would have never hit Clueless. Even if Clueless was acting recklessly. What about plaintiff? Who can plaintiff sue? Plaintiff was the passenger. Can plaintiff sue the driver, defendant? Can plaintiff sue Clueless? Yes, absolutely. They're both joint tortfeasors. So driver can't sue Clueless because of contributory negligence, but plaintiff, passenger, can sue both. One last little added little layer to this hypothetical. What happens if it was the passenger who was on their phone and got an email saying that they just got a job and they were going to get paid $200,000 a year and started screaming and waving their arms for joy? And that is what distracted driver. Right. Who? Well, Clueless was still driving negligence because he's Clueless. But they get in a car accident. Does the fact that it was the passenger, the plaintiff, who was screaming and distracting driver, that caused driver to drive negligently? Could plaintiff still sue driver? Could plaintiff still sue Clueless?
No.
Maybe not. But for passenger freaking out, maybe driver would not have been distracted. Make sense? Now here's where it gets interesting. And here's where you need to be careful. Because there are two types of negligence, contributory negligence. And it depends upon which state you are in. And the outcome are huge in one situation. The states that use what is referred to as pure contributory negligence. There are five states plus DC where this is the legal defense. In those states, if plaintiff is even 1% responsible, if plaintiff contributed to the harm 1%, defendant is not liable. It is harsh in a pure contributory negligence state. There are five states plus the District of Columbia. If plaintiff is even 1% responsible, they contributed 1% to whatever happened, the defendant is not liable. So, here's a situation for you. You are walking across the street, right? And you have your earbuds on. You just walk across the street. Driver's doing 120 miles an hour. Comes screeching around the corner on two wheels. Runs you over. If you are in a contributory negligent state, do you have a claim against that driver for negligence?
No.
Why not?
You're wearing headphones.
What should you not have been doing?
Wearing headphones.
The fact that you had your earbuds in is enough for playing a defendant to turn around and say, hey, if they weren't listening to something, they would have heard me coming. They never would have gotten hit.
But is wearing headphones necessarily negligent?
Could be. If it could be, again, this is when we're talking five states plus the District of Columbia. That could be enough. Because what do most headphones do?
Block out the noise.
They block out the noise. Yeah, absolutely. So don't do something like this in Alabama, Maryland, North Carolina, Virginia, or Indiana. The majority of the states are comparative negligence states. Comparative negligence states involve where the plaintiff may recover in proportion to what they did. So what these states do is they look at what did the plaintiff do? And they compare that to the harm they suffered. If it is less than 50%, they will win. But the damages are reduced proportionally. So if it can be shown that plaintiff contributed 40%, to whatever harm they suffered, defendant is only responsible for 60% of the damages. Again, they will look at how much plaintiff contributed to the harm. And they'll compare the two. If it's less than 50%, damages will be reduced, as is liability. FYI, it's the jury that determines the percentage.
Massachusetts is a comparable state. What happens if it's more than 50%? Is defendant liable for something? So let's say you're 60% responsible for your injuries, and I'm only 40. Are you? Not in a comparably negligent state. If it's more than 50%, defendant is not liable for anything. So the key is that tilting point. Questions? One last more, because I'm not coming back to it. Assumption of risk. This is the other defense. If you do something and you know it's dangerous, and you either expressly say, no, I'm okay with it, or you simply act like you're okay with it, assumption of risk is a defense. So here's my quick hypothetical, and I'm going to send you on your way. You decide to ride bitch on a jet ski. Jet ski's flying across the water. You flip off, fall into the water, and another jet ski doesn't see you and hits you. Can you sue the driver of the jet ski that hits you? Why not? You knew the risk of getting on the back of a jet ski without being in control. So therefore, that other driver would not be responsible. Have a nice weekend. We're going to come back. We're going to do damages. And then I'll give you, you get another homework assignment on Monday. Maybe another quiz. Who knows? Like how I slipped that in at the end? Yeah.